From Northeast Public Radio, this is The Media Project, a weekly discussion about issues confronting the media.
Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They know the lowdown, now it can be told. I'll tell you quite reliably off the record about some charming people I have known. For I meet politicians and grafters by the score, killers plain and fancy, it's really quite a bore. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. They wallow in corruption, crime, and gore. Ting-a-ling-ling, city desk, pull the press, extra, extra, read all about it, it's a mess, meets the test. Oh, newspapermen meet such interesting people. It's wonderful to represent the press.
Media Project gives you an opportunity for a half hour of commentary, analysis, and even some days insight into the media issues of the week. I'm Rex Smith, editor of the Times Union, here with Dr. Alan Chartok, the CEO of Northeast Public Radio. And the one and only Rosemary Armeo is here.
Yay.
Longtime investigative reporter, former UAlbany professor, and currently...
What am I doing now? I'm the regional editor for a group called the Organized Crime and Corruption Reporting Project.
Yes.
And I'm working in Amman, Jordan.
At this point in Amman, Jordan. Absolutely.
I'm an enemy of the people.
And I may say at great personal risk.
No.
And with a lot of courage.
No.
And Kaylin Brown, longtime reporter herself and a professor and head of the journalism program at Journalism Department. Oh, I don't care what you call it.
The Department of Communications.
At the College of St. Rose. Jeez, academia. You know, we don't care. She's teaching young people to be journalists and to think critically, and that's fine. We'll just say that from now on so I don't have to get the department, the program, the everything confused, you know? Whatever.
Good for you, Rexy. We get it.
Oh, I get kind of fired up about all this academic stuff, but that's kind of silly. Hey, we need to start today, I think, by talking about, well, actually, let's start it backwards. Let's say we're going to talk about Molly Tibbetts. And if our listeners to this program don't know who Molly Tibbetts is, that's interesting to note because our listeners on The Media Project are well-informed people who pay attention to the news. Molly Tibbetts is the Iowa college student who was allegedly killed by an immigrant. That story, the arrest of her killer, occurred on the same day of the bombshells of two of the people close to the president becoming felons. And the interesting thing that was that if you were watching newscasts and changing channels that night between Fox News and the other outlets, Fox News was leading its newscasts with Molly Tibbetts. Everybody else, of course, was wall-to-wall coverage of what the implications are of these criminal actions on the presidency. So what do we make of the news coverage of that, and where do we go from here? Oh, I did leave out one thing. The alleged killer is apparently an undocumented immigrant who apparently was in this country illegally.
Yes, and of course, Trump went right to his base and started talking about this as if it was all undocumented or all immigrants were responsible for this. He spoke to one of those rallies out there. It was the politics of distraction once again. But it is the kind of thing that makes him a genius, an evil political genius, because what he did, you know, a lot of people say how stupid he is and the rest of it. No, he's the president of the United States. He got to be the president of the United States, and he understood, and this is where the journalism comes in, Rex. I know you'll be interested in that. He understood how to get to his base and how to make people write about him in a particular kind of way. And the more that they write about him and the more he calls the press the enemies of the people, the better his particular base, which got him elected and which may well get him elected the next time, did.
Well, Fox elevated that story about the death of this girl, a tragic death of a college student who was evidently murdered, because, of course, they're shilling for the president. But their decision to do that, they also defended, saying that that is what their audience wants to know. They are more interested in the death of this college student than they are in the results of the trials around the presidency.
Well, you know, Roger Ailes, who is gone now, boy, am I going to get into trouble, made a full-time imprint on the way in which Fox does its news. And you had a very attractive reporter sitting across from Trump doing what Ailes had instructed them all to do, which is to wear a short skirt and to show a lot of leg and to to do all of that. That's what makes Fox so attractive.
Well, I'm filled with despair. I'm glad I'm flying out soon because, once again, if we have people, if we have a citizenry unable to make the distinction between weather and climate, how are we going to get anyone to make a distinction between a truly heinous crime, assuming that it actually plays out the way it's been presented, and the fact that this is one undocumented worker among thousands? It won't happen.
Exactly.
And this is why Trump has been immensely successful, that this sort of propaganda, this sort of harping on immigrants are dangerous, even though all of our grandparents were immigrants, if not our parents, has had such resonance. It's why that jury, read about the jury in the Manafort trial, they've begun to speak, and they believed that, oh yeah, you know, this was all about just getting Trump. This was not about really trying Manafort. And they all thought he was really guilty, but they bent over backward in order not to find him guilty of everything. You call him an evil genius, maybe that's correct. He is a master propagandist, and we are all a bunch of sheep, and we're falling for it. And I don't expect it to get any better in light of Betsy DeVos's new announcement that she thinks the government should be spending money not on academic enrichment, but on buying guns for schools.
And by the way, that goes directly to that base too, which agrees with her. A lot of people in this country agree with that premise. Out of frustration, but it is interesting that the media piece of this is so fascinating to me, because a conclusion we have come to many times on this program is that if you are dealing with an uneducated population, they are vulnerable to this kind of messaging. And the press becomes, you know, the way in which that messaging occurs.
Which is why education is probably one of the most important components in this whole formula. The more people are educated on how the news works, the better they will understand what's actually happening as opposed to what's possibly happening.
At what point does the media bear responsibility, though, for failing to do enough about that so-called uneducated constituency? Are we to blame for having...
Or undereducated constituency.
Okay, right, that's fair. Are we to blame for not making our products accessible enough, packaging in ways perhaps that make them seem to be only for the elite, for not writing more to people, the mass audience that used to be greatly absorbing media? Is there not some responsibility that we share for allowing American society come to a point that lies have the same resonance as truth?
I think that I've spent 20 years now looking at how to make writing and news presentation more accessible. I think the media has taken remarkable steps towards this, but there reaches a limit. I mean, you got to read the stuff. And my college students, until I gave it up last year, and I'm sure yours too, Caitlin, don't read news. They read headlines on their phones. It's not the same. And I'm sorry, you can make those things as accessible as hell, and you're not going to impart knowledge and wisdom. And so that's why a slogan can have such power. That's why Trump goes out and gives a chant. I can say more with Lock Her Up, Make America Great, than I can with an entire article. And that is not all on the media. It is a whole lot on our citizens. And I'm really kind of sick as a journalist to take all the blame myself.
I wouldn't blame anyone right now. I just think it's important to move forward. I think there's been a little bit too much blaming in general. I think that if we start educating people at a younger age, again, about media and news literacy, and I keep repeating the same refrain, in the middle school and in the very younger grades, have kids get familiar with news, go through stories with them and explain what it means to do journalism. They're capable of understanding that.
Well, you know, Professor, I'm not so sure you're right about this. You and I have duked this out many times. I was talking to somebody with a doctorate the other day who said to me, now, I don't get this, Alan. Why is it that Congress can't indict? Isn't impeachment and indictment the same thing? Now, I must have talked about this 17,000 times on the air and everything else. No, impeachment is a political process. Indictment is a criminal process. I've said it over and over and over again. Nevertheless, I don't think you can say it too much. And I think when somebody is writing about this, that has to be said again and again.
Isn't impeach such a lovely word? My mother said, it sounds like a nice thing happens to you, like emplum me and apple me.
Well, that's nice. You know, impeach the orange. You know, it's, yeah. It's fair, right? This is an interesting slogan.
Was that bias?
Just passing it out there as a notion. You know, watching Hannity is the thing that scares me the most. He's the most popular show on the most popular cable network, although By the way, Rachel Maddow is on some of these nights in recent days. She's been the number one show
on cable. Neck and neck with him.
But that said, Hannity leads his program by, again, talking about the homicide of the Iowa college student. And then he goes on to the usual Fox News, the safer things, like Confederate statues, Democratic extremism, and that sort of thing.
Clinton emails.
Yeah, the Clinton emails, you know, absolutely. And the president's rally on the day that two people close to the president became felons at the president's rally, his supporters were yelling, lock her up," referring to the former Secretary of State, who's never been charged with a crime. And the question you have to ask is, so if you give coverage to that, are we behaving irresponsibly because what is going on there is out of step with reality, with what matters? Or you can't make that judgment, right? You have to cover it.
So you can cover it and say this is out of step with reality.
Mm-hmm. Oh, by the way, they do it. CNN does it all the time. MSNBC does it all the time. They say, president said this, it's factually incorrect, it's not true.
Yeah.
Right, one of the greatest obligations journalism has is to put the information it's delivering in context. Provide context.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Which is a very useful thing, and it's much better than we were 30 years ago, 40 years ago, when
you wouldn't have dared do that.
It was simply report what happened.
But it does lead to increased view, especially among the right, of the media as biased. And you look at the coverage and it's proof. You know, look at the editorials that have been against Trump since the minute he began running, and that's never stopped. You look at it and you're a Trump supporter and you see a press that's left-leaning and against your guy.
There's no doubt about that, that even in the fairest of coverage of stories, the stories come out looking bad for the president because bad things happen. Yes, bad things have been happening to him and by him. And there are blatant lies, and the job of journalists in terms of truth-telling is to point out lies. But you can see why the president's great partisans are upset about this, because he comes off looking bad in media coverage all over the place if the media coverage is based upon truth. But of course, as Rudy Giuliani tells us, truth isn't truth.
Truth? What's that? I don't know. Was it different under Obama? The right would tell you, no, you guys coddled him. You loved him to death. It's different for this guy. Do you think that's true?
There weren't people next to the president being indicted right and left. The head of the EPA didn't have to quit for financial impropriety, or the secretary of HHS.
But Benghazi, what about that? And and the IRS went after conservative groups.
Because conservative groups were abusing federal tax statutes. That's why they were particularly targeted. I really believe that. But, you know, we can't even mount a journalistic defense of that. We can't say, you know, we covered that because that's what was going on. And the Obama administration didn't even try to mount a defense of that, because, you know, if you see where the problems are, if you're an enforcement official, that's where you go. And in fact, right-wing groups were abusing federal tax
and
law.
And see, here you have a demonstration of how bias works.
Exactly. There's
a conflict in journalists between truth, which is what we do or try to do, and bias. So if something bad is happening and you report it, that's bad for the Trump people, and so they call it fake news.
Okay, so let me ask you guys a question, as long as you've raised that correctly, Rosemary. Does bias exist on newspapers? In other words, could you take the New York Times and say, okay, they have a liberal bias? Or could you take the New York Post and say, well, you know, they have a conservative bias? Does Mr. Pecker...
He's not a journalist, please.
Well, no, he calls himself a journalist. He owns a newspaper.
The owner of the National Enquirer,
which is one of the most read newspapers in the country, if not the world. Mr. Pecker obviously has done some very bad things here in terms of protecting the president, and certainly they have a bias. I mean, could there be something called the Shartok scale of bias? In other words, put every newspaper on a scale.
That actually exists. There is such a chart
well,
of that where you rank all news outlets on a ranking of liberal to conservative.
Well, then where would you put the Times Union, Rex's newspaper? It's a very good newspaper, and I must say it's one of the most bias-free institutions.
Don't you get accused of being like the most liberal newspaper in the state
New York Times? It's not. I mean,
he does. Yes, he's nodding. See,
but the question is, are you talking about the editorial page or the news columns?
No, I'm talking about the news columns.
The news columns. Huh.
Yeah. You know, there was something, children, back in the day called the Taft-Hartley Law. And it had to do with labor and trying to contain labor. And some Congress people put themselves in the middle. They said, I'm not going to take one side or the other. They were in real political danger at the next election. The ones who took a partisan side either way, vehemently, won. Don't you see what I'm saying here? So that I think that some degree that a newspaper puts itself at risk by playing it down the middle and being what some people might describe as boring or some people might call fair. Don't you see?
Mm. For our listeners, the first thing I'd suggest is you interjected that the Pecker Enterprise, which is the National Enquirer, is somehow equivalent to regular journalism, which it is not. People pay in that organization to kill stories, now called catch and release. That's not journalism. There's no paying sources. That's not a thing.
That, Caitlin, is why I truly love and admire you. Because you always talk about what journalism should be, and I always talk about what journalism is.
Well, listen, journalism is a mess right now. We've talked about Hannity and Pecker in this conversation. I don't consider either of them my peers.
There you go.
Well, you don't, and it's very nice of you and so condescending of you to say that, Rosemary.
I am not apologizing for elitism. If the people of this country listened to the elite, we'd be in much better shape.
Yes, we might be. But on the other hand, you know, to both you and Galen, I have to say, when you say that this newspaper is not a newspaper and the people are reading it every day, you go into the supermarket and there they are and they're reading that rag each day and they're getting their information, which they act politically on.
Which is why we need more attention to news literacy. This goes back to the point that Caitlin was making earlier. You need to start with children and teach them what news is. And
well,
teach
you've been
them
talking
how
about
to
this
recognize
for all these years, Rex.
Absolutely.
You've been talking about it for all these years. And where is your progress? What is it exactly that you can show us that is making things better?
Okay, well, that's actually a fair question.
Here's a little progress. There is some good news on this front that after decades of declining trust in the press, after relentless rhetorical attacks on the media by the president, trust in local media is actually up this year, past year. The new Poynter Media Trust Survey, get this, 76% of Americans across the political spectrum, 76% say they have either a great deal or a fair amount of trust in their local television news. 73% say they trust their local newspaper. That's within the margin of error. So about three quarters say they trust local media.
Does Sinclair have anything to do with this?
Which proves, of course, that the people who are asking the questions count for a great deal and the way in which a survey is constructed. Because when we've talked many times about some of the polls on the press, and they are lower than a hound's belly. So I'm not sure that we can say that on the basis of a Poynter, well-known and a good group, but
Poynter Media Trust Survey.
Yes.
It's a journalism foundation.
And we know that when you say Poynter, we are talking about a group that if you surveyed that, you'd find was generally regarded as a fairly liberal group, wouldn't you?
I think their journalistic standards are high. Poynter is an educational institution for mid-career, for ongoing training of journalists.
Now,
right?
You know I'm right. So stop with that baloney.
If you want to share your thoughts, media@wamc.org, media@wamc.org. Alan Chartok, Caitlin Brown, Rosemary Armeo, and Rex Smith. We are the Media Project, and that makes us the projectors, the projectiles. What is that? What are we here? So, Rosemary, tell us, you're going to be going back to Jordan. You're going to be trying to help investigative reporters.
I'm actually doing investigative reporting. Despite the fact that I neither speak nor read Arabic, I have found myself as the managing editor of this group of editors who fans out and gets reporters from all over the Arab world to write about things that they're not supposed to write about by their government's rules. I'm training little enemies of the people. They're using data and they're using freedom of information laws as they exist and pressing them where they don't. And it's so fun.
Wow. And there are freedom of information laws in other countries?
There are. They usually have like big holes in them, like you can't blaspheme God. Uh-huh. You can't insult the king. these are kind of like broad things.
How about advocating for women? Can you advocate for women?
Well, if you can do it in a way that doesn't insult the king or religion, you can. But there actually the women of Jordan, I love. It's traditional. They keep women down. But they get back at it. They're very highly educated. You know, they can play by the rules and then break all the rules to do what they want.
Well, they had
liberated.
The former Princetonian Lisa Hallaby is their queen for years, right?
That's
so not that I've memorized.
Was she now the queen mother?
Lovely.
Because the new king is the son by a different mother.
Oh,
so she's
I see.
Persona non grata, actually, right now.
What do you know?
Interesting.
That's very cool. You know, this is an interesting trend. I have come across several young reporters who have studied Arabic, who are learning it.
I was just talking to Caitlin that she also knows of several, and I get them all the time at my place because I'm an English speaker, so they get hold of us and we go out to dinner, and they teach wonderful. They have wonderful classes in Amman for this.
Having more language as a reporter is invaluable.
Absolutely.
And it's just going to become more and more invaluable.
Yep.
So the more reporters and reporters in training who can learn another language, the more individuals we can get in the news to tell their stories.
Sure. Yeah, if I had anything to do over again in my education, that would be it. You know, and now it's Arabic, Chinese, Spanish. Really, any language can help.
Absolutely.
Less French than it used to be.
Less French than it used to be.
Which we were taught as children, you know. Everybody thought that was a great
idea. And English is really amazing because it's spoken by so many people that we native speakers are actually the least able to communicate. When you're not a native speaker, you use a pared-down vocabulary, a very direct language, and all of the little flourishes and idioms and stuff that we use actually impedes communication with other people. It's really interesting.
Finally today, we do
have to
salute.
Finally, we're almost done?
That's a sad thing. More staff reductions in the newspaper world. McClatchy taking another 3.5%. McClatchy is one of the major national chains that includes the Miami Herald and the Charlotte Observer, the Kansas City Star. You know, it's been a great company. McClatchy's Washington Bureau had significant coverage that differentiated itself from others in their run-up to the Iraq War.
Now a movie. Shock and awe.
There you go. Shock and awe. And so the question that you have to ask is where this all will end as newsrooms get further pared down and how you confront this, how you contend with. We've been talking about the need for great journalism, and even so, the resources continue to shrink. I don't know. What do you tell your students? What do you tell them to do to make their way in this world?
Well, first, they need to be trained on how to interview people and how to listen. Listening is a big part of journalism. They need to look at all the opportunities out there, because if you look on journalismjobs.com, there are still jobs. You just need to throw your hat into a ring, perhaps in Idaho, to start out. But there are jobs out there. So students are learning the skills, writing and rewriting and revising and getting their stories out in public. That's super important.
What do you think about the model of journalists being more like my friend who's a professional flutist who plays for the Syracuse, Albany, and Glimmerglass orchestras? You know, there might be something to that, right?
You mean playing for more than one?
Yeah, journalists as entrepreneurs who sell themselves to various places.
I've always told my students, look, there are a lot of opportunities here. Some people made themselves millionaires and billionaires by setting up a website with a unique perspective.
Some of my former students are freelancing and have written books and are getting on the radio and television and are making
their way. It's hard for somebody in my shoes. I have to get more comfortable with accepting reporting from non-staff sources.
Yeah.
And we have to vet it, of course. It goes through the same editing process.
I hear from this all the time from young people who have taken the courage and the money from their parents to go overseas where news is, and they write about it, and then there's no place to print it here. So I like hearing all this optimism. I don't share it. I think journalism is a really hard job, and to have to worry about where your next paycheck is coming to, in addition to getting a source to talk to or to dig out a secret, it's too much, and you're going to see some really bad work compared to what we've had.
Rosemary Armijo, there she is, telling truth. Caitlin Brown, Alan Shartok, I'm Rex Smith. Thanks to our producer, David Gustina, and to you for listening to us on The Media Project.
Cake, ding-a-ling, ding-a-ling, ling-a-ling, ling. Now newspapermen are such interesting people. They used to work like hell just for romance. But finally, the movies notwithstanding, they all got tired of patches on their pants. They organized a union to get a living wage. They joined with other actors upon a living stage. Now newspapermen are such interesting people when they know they've got a people's fight to wage.
The Media Project is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio. Alan Shartok is CEO of WAMC, professor emeritus at the State University of New York, commentator, columnist, and author. Rex Smith is editor of the Times Union. Caitlin Brown is chair of the Department of Communication at the College of St. Rose. And Rosemary Armijo is an investigative journalist and former head of the Department of Journalism at the University at Albany. You can listen to or podcast The Media Project anytime at WAMC.org or just download the WAMC app for your iPhone or Android at the Play Store today. Thanks for listening.
Publishers must go to working folks for readers and to big shots for their dough. Now publishers are such interesting people. It could be prostitution, I don't know. Ting-a-ling-a-ling, circulation, ting-a-ling-a-ling, advertising, get those readers, get that payoff. What a headache, what a mess. Oh, publishers are such interesting people. Let's give free cheers for freedom of the press.